afternoon. I can finally do that without saying good morning first. It's getting better. I don't make change easily, apparently, with stuff like that. So my name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
And when we're all in the right chairs on Sunday afternoon between noon and 2, we become We the People.
We the People Radio.
Bill's got a sinus infection. Poor Bill. Yeah. Bill was sick last week.
Yeah, it's the same thing. It just goes through phases. Now it's gone through the...
Now he has like a little egg.
Yeah, I got a little egg on his cheek. My sinuses and... Yeah, it feels fantastic.
We're going to have to go get Bill fixed. We should, not get Bill fixed. That doesn't sound right, does it?
Facially, he is starting to resemble Kim Jong-un.
As long as he doesn't get the haircut.
It's funny. I was going to get a haircut yesterday. It's a good thing I didn't.
Good thing you didn't. Otherwise, we would have had more. Oh, my gosh. So you can always find us at wethepeopleradio.us. We have archives that go back forever. 2010. We always go through this. 2009, 2010, something. 2011? No. Anyway, it's a really long time.
2010. You're right.
Maybe. We've done shows on almost everything, it seems. And just when we think we ran out of stuff, there's something new.
We did Kim Jong-un right here.
Yeah. We had Kim Jong-un live on radio. Yep. If you could see him, you'd know. So we're always looking for your ideas. And at the webpage, you can get our emails and phone numbers. And let us know your ideas. See if we can scare those folks up. We have, Bill, it's your guy next week. The martial arts guy.
Yeah. I'll think of it.
Oh, my gosh. My mind just went blank right when I said we have, and it, boom, gone. Anyway, we're going to be chatting with him next week. He said he's got some new information.
Conor McGregor.
McGregor, that's right.
He is pretty chatty. I guess you could have him on radio.
I'd have to have my hand over the button.
And absolutely, you can take a punch. God bless America, that guy. God love him. So today, now I'm finally at the part where I can do today. Little computer snag here. We have Oscar Braun on with us. And he goes by Oscar Knows. K-N-O-W-S, not the kind that Bill has. We've been talking about Bill's sinuses. I don't want to get us off on the wrong track here. I'm super curious when that transition took place, Oscar.
Hello, I'm here.
Hey,
I'm,
there he is.
I was so engaged listening to you guys having so much fun this morning. Good morning.
There's never a shortage of
that. We should probably keep our day jobs, but other than that.
I think that might be well advised.
It's probably well advised.
So you'd like to know where Oscar Knows came from,
The K-N-O-W-S Knows.
Yeah, well, that's a nickname that I had some years ago when I was with Johnson & Johnson in one of their dental divisions. And I was the oldest employee at that particular company when J&J acquired us. And having been there from the very beginning, which had been about 18 years before Johnson & Johnson came on, I had really the full knowledge of all the products and all the iterations that we went through at that particular company. We were making orthodontic appliances and all sorts of dental products. And I had gone to the startup at the beginning. And I'm extremely dyslexic. Mm-hmm. And the only way that I could actually educate myself as I was growing up was to... hear things verbally rather than written. So when I was going through training to get into all these new products, my dear mother, who was my mentor through life, said to me, you know what you need to do, son? You need to come up with some 4x5 flashcards, and you put the name of the product on one side, and on the other side you put down 3 features and 3 benefits. So that's what I did. And within 6 months in my career and starting with this company, we broke every record in the industry. And I should say I broke every record in the industry. And over the years, whenever somebody had a question about whether it be research and development, products of the past, whether it be ours or competitors, they'd say, Oscar knows, call him.
Yeah.
But I never told him my secret. And my mom recognized, and this is now, understand, in the late 40s and early 50s, when I was in grammar school, that, you know, there was something wrong with me. They didn't know what the learning disability was. They hadn't really discovered anything at that time. But she realized that I'm an auditory learner. And that, you know, standing up in class as we did back in those days, and you'd have to recite, you'd have to read, you know, usually starting in the fourth grade. I just couldn't do it. And, I mean, it just looked like a bunch of scrambled things on there. And every time I'd turn a page, it was a whole different page of scrambled stuff. So anyway, she's the one that, for the next couple of years, helped me educate myself. And she would always reassure me and my brother, who was also dyslexic, that, you know, education is a lifelong pursuit. And you just see here, in a couple of years, by probably a fourth time, before you get to sixth or seventh grade, you're going to have all this down. And she was right. So I have always been somebody that did research, so I consider myself a researcher. And then, you know, I archive everything between my ears. And it's the memory of conversations I've had. And I can remember lectures or conversations with clients and prospects 20, 30 years ago.
I think most of us have that with, at the very least, music. You know, when you heard a song, especially in your teens and in that time period when music is, you know, really a big part of your life, and you hear a song, yeah, hear a song 30 years later, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, I remember where I was. I was, you know, in the gym doing whatever. I mean, music has that for most people. But, boy, if you can transition that to everything else.
Yeah, that's exactly. In fact, you know, you raise music. I discovered Pandora, app on and where you can create your own radio station. Well, all the music, I've got the James Taylor radio station that I created, and it's all music from the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
You know, and it just puts me back there, and, you know, and I can just relate instantly to things that happened to me in my life. And again, on a family level or on a professional level or just, you know, what I consider one of my great adventures. And it's the gift,
yeah,
that the good Lord gave me to compensate for my dyslexia.
That's awesome.
And I learned something recently. It just 85% of the graduates of MIT, severe dyslexia.
Really?
Yeah. And we tend to be,
wow,
artists, entrepreneurs, and I forgot what the third item is, like, believe it or not. So,
probably like science,
but,
and math.
It's worthwhile going to TED Talk sometime and look and see what they have on dyslexia. Some really very interesting information, you know, well presented. And it's like listening to somebody, you know, had creeped into my secret files and, you know, profiled me. But that's not uncommon. So it's,
wow.
It's a gift rather than a disability.
Imagine that. Imagine
so
that.
That's how Oscar Knows came about.
Huh.
And it has served me well all my life so far.
Did they ever find out that you had the flashcards?
I'm sorry?
did you ever, like, share with anybody at your work, like, how you got to remember all that stuff? I mean, did you ever give them the flashcard method?
Truthfully, no.
Huh.
I became leading one of a kind in the industry for nearly 30 years. And I'm talking about the dentist industry. And, I ended up the last 12 years before I, retired in 1990 and went to work exclusively for the Johnson & Johnson's big board in New Brunswick. They didn't want me to go to anybody else. So they thought, well, they'd wrap me up and they did. And I loved it and they paid me well. But I broke every record, whether it was market share and, you know, anywhere in the United States. I trained all the representatives that the company had at the time we were acquired, prior to the time that we were acquired, in Canada and South America and Europe, what have you. And it was just something that was, it became a passion to me. I would have never thought in a million years that dentistry or anything in the healthcare industry would be interesting. I came out of college into a restaurant that I had for 7 years, and then I moved on to that. And so it just, I was one of those people that never really knew what they wanted to do when I grew up. And I'm still in that, you know, situation, but, you know, yeah, anytime, though, it may come clear to me.
I can relate. I'm a career switcher as well. Probably better take a quick break, and then we'll actually be on track. We'll have a little celebration of capitalism for 2 minutes, and we'll be right back with our guest. We're actually going to talk about the U.S. EnviroBank. I know. Talk about switching gears, huh? You'll like it. It'll be fun.
Oscar knows.
Exactly.
That's right.
And we've got Bill's nose here, too, so that's very helpful.
What shall we do about them when they move into your neighborhood? They take over, but you all body and soul, then it's just your body, then they go. What shall we do about them?
Seems fitting. welcome back. We are chatting with our guest, Oscar Braun, who goes by Oscar Knows, K-N-O-W-S. Should never have talked about Bill's sinus problem. Oh, my goodness. And, you know, he's got a really interesting history. I did put that on the website for you there. He was with Johnson & Johnson for 28 years. And he is an open water instructor and research diver with 41 years of experience. Kind of seems.
Now, Oscar may have set the record for the longest period between appearances on this show, because we had him on 5.5 years ago.
I know. January 1st, 2012. I know. Isn't that crazy?
You sure.
Yeah.
You sure did. And you know what? I've relocated to Honolulu with my wife, actually, last year. And I do bounce back and forth between Honolulu and California. And my colleague and dear friend, Joe Shaughnessy, accompanied me on that show back in, when was it?
Yeah, 2012?
Yeah, it was 2011. Well, it was 20 New Year's Day. We pre-recorded it.
That's right, that's right.
We all giggled about it because we're in November. And we're trying so hard to, pretend that we've gotten up early on a New Year's Day,
that's
2012,
right.
and put this live show on for the benefit of your listeners. And,
that's right, because our show was at 8 o'clock in the morning back then.
Yeah.
That's right. And so we faked it.
And so we blew it. we kept on stumbling over ourselves and admitting that, you know, this is all pre-recorded.
It was Wednesday afternoon or whatever it was.
Later, yeah. But I got back into town, back to California here just a few weeks ago, and I get a call from Joe Shaughnessy, and he says, you know, hey, have you given Aaron a call yet regarding the launch? And I said, Aaron. He says, yeah, we the people radio. You know, I said, oh, my God, no. So I called Aaron, and I said, you know, any chance I could be on tomorrow? Anyway, to see if the schedule was open for 9/11. But I was just blown away when I reviewed the show that day. I hadn't looked at it in years, probably 5+ years. And I was like, God, it moves quickly.
Boy, it
so, yes,
too.
This, I guess it's my second episode.
Yeah, we're going to have to shorten those episodes up, I guess, you know, because every 5 years that gets a little hard to follow.
Yeah.
Well, last time you were...
Where'd we leave off?
We're never going to make it on Netflix.
last time you were on, Oscar, you were toying with running for governor, I believe.
At that time, I was running against Senator Feinstein.
Oh, for senator. Okay.
Yeah. I've run against her twice. The first time.
And the bummer is she's still there.
Well, at that particular time, 2012, you know, let's see, that's not 2000, when would that be?
It was 2012.
Yeah, it would have been the 2012 election, I think.
Yeah, the 2012 election, I did rather well. That was the second time I had run against her, and I came in 11 out of a field of 25, plus Senator Feinstein, and for the life of me, I couldn't figure out how I did so well compared to the first time I did it, where I had such fun in traveling the state, especially the eastern and northern parts of the state, and I think I came in, second or third to last, and garnered a couple of thousand votes. But on the 2012, I was on the top of the ballot in L.A. County, of course, which is the largest county in the state. And my campaign name, of course, with my full name, was Oscar Alejandro Braun. And that seemed to pay off. So, I mean, I got a huge boost.
Throw down with the old support. Alejandro and you're in.
The Alejandro did it, yeah. So it just, I enjoyed the campaigns. I pride myself that I spent next to nothing on them, literally a couple of thousand dollars, which was mostly in just traveling costs and driving around the state in my little CW posse motorhome. But just meeting the folks out there, and I obviously have a preference for the rural areas. I had family for many, many years in the San Joaquin, and Basque sheep herders or dairymen. It's like, night and day, as I'm sure you're aware of, up there, coastal San Francisco especially, but, the coastal California. Anyway.
It's too bad because the coast of California is really pretty and it'd be a great place to live, but politics are ghastly.
Not a lot of sheep herders in San Francisco.
Well, probably politics would be on my end.
Yeah, heavy with sheep, no herders.
Yeah.
Nice, Bill. I guess Bill's not that sick today. Bill has recovered. He's back in the game.
Oh, he's really sick.
Yeah.
He's really sick.
Sick puppy.
So we should tell them so there is an Oscar Nose Incorporated.
Yes.
And then you have...
Oscar Nose Incorporated is the name of my foundation. My corporation. When I retired in 1990 and I was becoming a consultant that could only consult with J&J, so I used Oscar Nose Inc. And I've been using that as a corporate name ever since.
And then when did you create the California Watershed Posse?
California Watershed Posse was created in 2000. And I'll just back up at 5 years. In 1995, Oscar Nose Inc. launched the first international dive travel exchange in Louisiana. And
destination.
Pardon me?
Was Louisiana a major dive destination?
No, it was. I'm sorry. We were having the Dive Industry Marketing Association annual meeting.
Pay attention, Bill. All right. It was on land.
Sorry, I wasn't following.
Yeah, and it was the annual DEMA show, and the keynote speaker for that particular event was Ron Brown, the then Secretary of Commerce in the Clinton administration, and his request and the purpose for being there was asking for the support of the dive industry, recreational diving is what I'm referring to, of course, to support the U.S. sanctuaries, water sanctuaries, marine sanctuaries throughout the nation. And I gave a presentation right after him. and he came over and visited my exhibit where we had all these computers set up, and you know, and we were the only internet business in the entire floor. You know, the internet was very, very young at that time. Anyway, and during his visit, he said, you know, gee, Oscar, you're out there in California. In fact, don't you live somewhere that's, you're actually on the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary? And I said, yeah. I said, well, I'm in San Mateo County. I'm in Half Moon Bay. And he said, oh, gosh, that's fantastic. You know, he said, you know, you seem to really love what you're doing with this Oscar Nose thing. And I said, yeah, I said, I get it. He said, you know, well, would you do me a big personal favor? You know, he's an all politician. That's the first time I've ever met him. And I said, well, you know, what might that be? And he says, you know, we would love to have you, you know, head up the water quality protection program on the private sector side. And I said, okay. And you say, you talking about the whole sanctuary? And he said, oh, no. Maybe just San Mateo County, because that includes the San Francisco Peninsula. I said, it sure does. So I said, yeah, okay, I'll do that. And he said, you know, you just contact the sanctuary head there and superintendent there in Monterey and with NOAA, and, you know, you're good to go. And I did. And we communicated a couple times by letter, but it wasn't that much longer. After maybe within 18 months, that he was killed, you know, flying over Bosnia during that war.
Oh, wow.
And, but, when I got back to California, shortly after that, I incorporated the Save Our Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary Foundation. How do you like that for a title? And, which was too long for a domain name, so it was Save Our Bay. And, we are Save Our Bay.
And that's why on a bunch of your websites, you see SOB stories.
That's right.
Save Our Bay stories.
Yeah. And
just
and
give people a little heads up there. It took me a while to figure that out.
Yeah. So that's what we formed it under. But the domain name was of Save Our Bay. So as far as the SOB stories, that was the kickoff piece that I authored. And Oscar Nose then was becoming a publisher, a producer, unbeknownst for not only foundations but all sorts of folks in business. And I knew that I needed a kickoff piece. How do I capture the San Mateo County and the sanctuary folks' attention? So I decided that, okay, I got to write a sob story, and it's you know, it's got to be real, and so I write the incredible sob story, and the incredible sob story. I'm only going to give you a teaser on it because the listeners can kind of read it for themselves, and they'll understand the whole history of the sob stories and the foundation. So the sob story takes place on January 1st, 1997.
Maybe we should celebrate capitalism here before we do the story, or
okay.
Then we'll be tardy. How about that?
Okay.
All right.
Okay, that sounds good.
Hold that. We'll do the sob story when we get back. That would be
okay.
The Save Our Bay story, actually. Yeah, when I first saw it, I was all, these must be dicey stories. It's like, oh, I get it. Took me a minute.
Nice.
I had to read some more stuff. We are chatting with Oscar Braun. We're going to cover a myriad of topics today. So if you were up for a myriad of topics on a Sunday afternoon, you're in the right spot. You can find out all about us. You can check out the archives and all that good stuff at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back. one, Bob.
I actually either didn't pay attention or have never heard the beginning of that.
Probably never played the beginning of it before.
No, never did. Zin Marin, there you go, Oscar. Get your own special music from your own special place. All right, the story.
The sob story. So on January 1st, the story goes, I'm up early, I grab my big board, throw it into the Woody, and head over to Mavericks. And I get there, and looks like I'm going to be the first one in the water. So I head out. And as I'm out a couple of yards, 100 yards, I see something that, you know, a quick glance looks like, you know, maybe a swimmer in distress. So I really speed up. I get out there, and just before I get within a few feet, my God, I lift my head again off the board, and I see that it's an otter. And I just sat on my board there, and, you know, and I'm completely out of breath. And the otter hand signals to me that, are you okay? And I, you know, divers communicate underwater with hand language. Yeah. And I assure him I am. And the otter begins to tell me that, you know, candidly, I'm too old. I'm too fat, and I really had no business being out there.
Ouch.
At this time of day, you know. So anyway, we engage in a conversation, and it's essentially about the life here in the sanctuary. And the conversation turns towards the pollution problems here in Half Moon Bay and the impact it's having on otters and other species. So I do my best to explain to him that, yeah, he's right, but, you know, these things are unfortunate, but it's not that the, our elected officials don't care, but it's just that, the folks that live out here and come out here really don't want things to change. You know, they want it to keep and look just like it was 50 years ago. And, unfortunately, the sewer authority, the sewer plant processing thing on the coast was at capacity in 1980, and, you know, we're putting all sorts of bad stuff out there. Anyway, he challenges me. And he says, well, you know, you say you understand, you say you care, but, you know, what are you going to do about it? And I said, well, you know, what can one man do? Yeah, I mean, I just, yeah, you know. I could, you know, but I understand it's the truth. And he says, well, you know, you can do a lot. You can raise your voice. You know, you can get involved. You know, you could spread the word. You know, is this what you really believe in? So I said, well, okay, I'll bite it. You know, I'll do what I can, but you know, he's gotta be available. When I have questions, I gotta talk to him about. He tells me how I can find him. And he's very recognizable because he's got something unique that he treasures. Anyway, that was the you know, the incredible sob story was the title of the first one. And there are two subsequent sob stories, 2 and 3, that are come right out of the Monterey Sanctuary Press. And these were separated by a year or two, and they were scientific articles on what the impact of the pollution in the sanctuary was doing, not only to people, but of course, but the otters. And it has to do with medicines getting into the discharge from the sewer authority and stuff like that, prescriptions and all the various types. Anyway, all about the Water Quality Protection Program, which is the mission of the Save Our Bay or the California Watershed Posse. So it's always been on theme. The fourth, sob story is the, Flight 93 on 9/11. And that's the airplane that went down in Pennsylvania. And on that airplane was the Foundation's Clean Water Act attorney who had represented us for about 4 years at that point. And even to this day, I have a difficulty in talking about it without getting, frankly, quite emotional. But we, in the announcement, which we put out, and we being my wife and a gentleman named John Plock, who is our chairman of our foundation and a very eminent civil engineer, put out to the public and to the media, and you know, we gave the word that Alan Bevin was lost. Alan Anthony Bevin was lost on that flight, along with 32 other wonderful patriots from California. And we identify that, you know, in that communique, which was a one pager, that Alan Bevin was the co-founder of the California Watershed Posse in the year 2000. And also the inspiration in coming up with a plan in which we call the EnviroBank. And the EnviroBank project that we had created in 2000 was to create here in California a central funding resource for environmental projects, such as, you know, water purification, or, you know, cleaning up all these problems that we have. And it also would include the issues that we have in the watershed, like vegetative fuel management and what have you. Anyway, in that same document, we talk about the projects in which we were working on. And one of those projects, and a very prominent project that we've been working on since day one, since 1995, is the historic Johnson Ranch, 1,000-acre ranch here in Half Moon Bay. And my personal ranch was the upmost parcel of the Johnson Ranch, and we initially had 90 acres. And the property had been used since the 60s as a landfill. And now, of course, it wasn't until the 70s or later that, you know, California Environmental Quality Act or all these EPA, et cetera, didn't even exist. So the developers of Ocean Colony, a gated community here in Half Moon Bay that was owned by Westinghouse, they would do the demolition. They owned the property. He owned the Johnson Ranch, and they used it to dispose of garbage, construction garbage for the most part. But the public at large, the locals, people that came over the hill that didn't want to pay for to take it over to Ox Mountain here on the coast, the regulated landfill, would come out here and dump it, you know, directly sometimes into our streams and creeks, or just the property, and just, you know, out of sight, out of mind.
Wow.
So that had gone on for, well, since the 60s. And that's what everything that I'm quoting to you, by the way, is documented in the current issue of the Sob Stories. Gives you the background of the foundation, Alan Bevin, you know, the court cases. They're not voluminous documents, by the way, but it just records all this. Anyway, in 2010, my wife and I filed for Chapter 11 that had nothing to do with our ranch property, but had to do with a business venture that we did regarding in dentistry, and it was the Dr. Smiles Oral Systemic Laboratory. Anyway, we were in business for about 18, 19 months. The market took a big beating when the Obama administration came up with their Affordable Care Act, but it was the tax on medical appliances and services. Okay, so it's like, wow. Well, so we filed for a Chapter 11, and for your viewers, the Chapter 11 is you're asking the court for a reorganization plan. It's not. It's different from a Chapter 7, which is the most common, and which is strictly you are selling off the property. Okay. Anyway, so we filed for Chapter 11, and the
seven.
The mortgage company that held the loan on our property was a bank called Chevy Chase Bank. And Chevy Chase Bank went bankrupt in 2008. And in December of 2008, Capital One acquired Chevy Chase Bank. And Capital One got from the taxpayers, from our treasury, $3.56 billion, that's with a B, to purchase Chevy Chase and also cover potential mortgage losses that they would have. And Capital One, up until the time of the acquisition of Chevy Chase Bank, had never been in the mortgage business. They've always been, well, in credit cards and other types of financing, but they were created in 2006 or 2004, one of the two. Anyway, so they were one of 23 creditors that petitioned the court to be part of this Chapter 11 process. And the last thing I'll share with you just as far as Chapter 11, in Chapter 11, all the creditors have a place at the table, which means to say that any settlement plan, moving forward, has to be approved by unanimously. So this all started in 2010, and in 2011, December 2011, Capital One hired a very large, very prominent law firm representing them in the Chapter 11, but they retained another firm, and this firm's sole function was to seek a permission to do a foreclosure. And in order to do that, they have to ask the court to lift the stay to allow them, as one of the creditors, to take the property and go. So anyway, there was a hearing in December of 2011. And at the time in which we had that hearing, the court had that hearing, we were without legal counsel. Our legal counsel had been dismissed by the court 6 months previously because they didn't have, frankly, the qualifications to handle a Chapter 11 case. That was the big problem there. They weren't evil people. They just couldn't handle it. And Chapter 11s are completely managed by the court. The judge, court trustees, and the attorneys representing the one filing and all the creditors. So it's just, you're a spectator. You don't control your checkbook. You don't do anything. So in comes the bank, and they said, you know, Your Honor, we'd like to have the stay lift for Capital One so we can withdraw this particular asset that we have and foreclose. So the court says, okay, have you read, he's asking all 22 of these creditors, have any of you read the only court approved current market value and appraisal? And the answer was no one had read it. And it had been done in, I believe, June of the same year, just 6 months prior to this hearing. So the judge spots me out in the audience, and he says, I see Mr. Braun's here. And I said, Roman, would you do me a favor and would you come up and could you summarize what it says?
So hold that thought. Capitalism is, okay, again, rearing its fabulous, fabulous, ugly head. I mean, you can't say that, but we need to have a break in the story. Fit in some good advertisers.
No problem.
Say hi, say thanks, and then we'll be right back. You are listening to We the People Radio. We're here with Oscar Braun. We'll come right back. 2 minutes. Money, 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 money.
I'm impressed with my attorney, Bernie. I'm impressed with his influential friends. He's got very big connections, and I follow his directions. Bernie knows his way around, and so I always do what Bernie recommends. I am blessed with my attorney, Bernie. I'm impressed with the way he runs the store. He's got Dodger season boxes and an office full of foxes. It's amazing all the different things your average guy might need a lawyer for.
It would only be better if you had an attorney in this mix whose name was Bernie. Ah, classic tune.
So okay. We were talking about the property, and you were going to tell us what it was worth.
The judge calls me up, and he asked me to please summarize, give it a 90-second, two-minute summary. So I said, okay. I said the property is the uppermost parcel of the Johnson Ranch. It's an historical land grant ranch, blah, blah, blah. And it's got probably, out of the 1,000 acres, probably 250 to 300 acres have been utilized as a landfill, and that lead contamination has come up in previous investigations, soil tests and things of that sort. Drains into the Arroyo Leon, which is a very prominent creek here, and Mill Creek, and then onto the Pacific. And I said it's an endangered species habitat. It's also part of the Palisito Basin restoration plan, which is something that the state and regional water boards have been working on for over a decade. And I said, and because of the situation at Moon Acres, my particular ranch, we are almost out of water. We're down to about 200 gallons a day. The new owners of the lower portions of the Johnson Ranch is the Peninsula Open Space Trust. They've owned it since 2000, and they have refused to do any remediation and come into compliance. And I said, so the property, according to the court-appointed appraiser, is $345,000, which is essentially the exact same price in which I paid for the land, raw land, in 1989. You could hear a pin drop. Literally. Yeah, I mean, it was just dead air. And the judge says, well, thank you very much. And she said, oh, Mr. Bowen, you do me a favor? Would you ask the trustee here to see that everybody gets a copy of this? I said, yeah, I'll be glad to, Your Honor. So the judge said, okay, we're gonna take a break. We're going to come back after lunch. And after lunch, you know, you'll have my decision. So, and the story that I'm sharing with you is on the Sob Story website. It's got on the newsletter, the current edition that's out. And the transcript of that hearing is actually there, and it's a short read. It's only about 30 pages, and I think that the listeners would learn a great deal about the bank, but on how the court deals with this stuff. But this is something that happens every single day. And anyway, so we get back after lunch, and the judge has a hearing, calls us in, and he says, well, I'm going to lift the stay, and I'm going to let you have it. And, you know, and you folks want to foreclose on, and that's a good deal, because this particular property is the sole asset that is holding up this Chapter 11 being settled. This asset isn't worth anything, and there's no way that the creditors are going to approve it, you know, because everything's done as a package, because there's nothing in it for them, and there's nothing in it for you. This is not that you have no asset here. You have nothing but liabilities here. So he says, but, you know, you want it, you're good to go. I'm paraphrasing, of course. But, I mean, so that was that.
Wow.
So the following month, in January of 2012, now, the court orders yours truly to represent himself and his wife with a Capital One's lead attorney. And who's different from the guy that came in representing a company, a firm called, doesn't make it, Mike Duncan.
Hold
that's
that.
All they do is foreclosures. Okay.
Hold that,
so anyway.
Hold that thought. We're going to have a news break here. And when we come back, we'll find out the rest of the story. And that'll lead us right into the EnviroBank, which was the title of our show. We're here with Oscar Braun. You're listening to We the People. Oh. Good afternoon, and welcome back to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
And look at that. It's like we do it every week, almost. We are here with our guest, Oscar Braun. And
Oscar knows.
K-N-O-W-S. That's, you'll have to listen to the first part. We can't possibly recap that all for you.
Kind of like the Shadow knows.
Yeah, exactly. Do you remember
it's
that?
Oscar.
Yeah. Well, That's aging you.
I know. I love the Shadow. That was like, hurry up, it's on. Oh, that was the best. Where would you like to start? Would you like to go back to court or launch forward?
I go back to court, and then I think we're going to move very quickly here and get into the basis of why the EnviroBank. And when I say the EnviroBank, I'm talking now, I'll be talking about the U.S. EnviroBank.
Okay.
So we're now in January of 2012, and the court is frustrated because things are just dragging on, and the trustees still haven't found a replacement law firm that can take on our case for my wife and myself. So he orders, he says, Mr. Brown, I want you to have a settlement conference with Mr. Strauss, the lead counsel for Capital One. So I meet with him, and he was a very, very bright attorney, and I'd say a very ethical attorney. I wasn't in love with his personality, but he was, a man of integrity is the best way I would say it. Anyway, I asked him, let me ask you, why didn't you guys just take the property when I literally offered the keys to Chevy Chase Bank, and I said, we can no longer continue funding either the mortgage or the cost in bringing it property into
compliance.
Into compliance. And he said, well, you've got that 50-year lease that you entered into in 2004, which predates Chevy Chase Bank's loan in 2006, so it's not breakable. And this property is virtually impossible to sell because of the lease. And the only water source that remains at that time was the well that was the residential well that is located on the lease portion. And the lease, it is leased to the foundation, to the California Watershed Posse. So I said, oh, okay. And he said, I'm not in a position to give you advice. He said, but you might want to actually record that against the deed. And I said, okay, I'll pass that on to my attorneys when we get one. So anyway, there were other things we discussed, but there was no outcomes of that meeting as far as the settlement goes. So a few months later, we get two fabulous attorneys with a great deal of experience in Chapter 11s that are located here on the peninsula. And they represented us in court, and I shared with them the feedback that I got from opposing counsel in the settlement. And so they said, okay, well, you're definitely going to do that. And while you're at it, because of the nature of the property, we're gonna look into seeing if we can register to record to their deed a document known as environmental restrictions, and it goes with the property in perpetuity, and essentially it points out that it's an environmentally polluted property. All the background documents are there, And when I say background documents, again, I'm talking about court documents or government documents, investigations that have been done in the past on the property. So I had that done, and in December of 2012, recorded both the 50-year lease and the environmental restrictions with the approval. Everything has to come with the approval of the court. So we're into 2013, and the judge is, at this point, pretty darn livid that they haven't foreclosed on the property. He wants to get this case off the docket, and it would be a bullet to get it done, and if they would just do the foreclosure. So he's putting pressure on Capital One, and then I get a call from Capital One corporate and saying, you know, we'd like to have you put the property up for sale. And I said, okay. And we'd like to have you ask $5 million. And I said, okay. So I went down, and they gave me a three-year listing window. So I went down. I acquired a local realtor, and we put it on the market. And at the short sale, $5 million asking price. And I explained to the realtor, who was happened to be a longtime friend and neighbor, I said, you know, this is not going to happen, and you know, and I'm willing to pay you, you know, a nominal fee here as the owner, but it just, you know, you don't need to put any money into this or effort. So lo and behold, out of the blue, you know, we put on multiple listing, we get a call, and it's a gentleman that specializes in distressed properties, was the way he put it. And he says, I'll put $5 million in escrow, and I'd like to, you know, negotiate with the bank. So, sure. So he turned it over to the bank. And his terms were is that they had to have what is known as a phase one and a phase two. Phase one is a surface survey, and a phase two is a soil survey. And they get down and water sampling and things of that sort. So, bank says absolutely going to do it, you know, we're going to, and sure enough, they retain a firm to do it, and a very prominent firm to do the survey. And they have to get the owner's permission, my permission to do it. I said, sure, come on up. And, I provide them, at their request, with all the documents that I have on this property. And the entire Johnson Ranch. And that in itself is over 1,000 pages. So the guy couldn't thank me enough. He went and got whatever he could find at the county records and the city of Half Moon Bay records and issues the phase one. And the attorney that, the senior attorney that I had had the consult with, you know, he sends it out to, prospective buyer and also to our attorneys. And, this phase one phase ones are normally maybe 25, 30 pages. This one's 314 pages.
Wow.
So it gives you the extent, but it has all the court proceedings and the sampling and the date and the poopy. So the lead attorney sends, I says, okay, here this is, and, you know, we're going to have a phase two done in, you know, probably in the next 4 to 6 weeks. And that communication, by the way, all the communications that I'm just kind of highlighting for you are in the documents. They're all before the court. So, I mean, there's nothing is left out. So anyway, and I call my attorneys, I say, you know, I think Doug might be a little bit confused, or he's trying to, you know, maybe mislead the client, the buyer, because. And he said, "Well, why is that?" I said, "Well, phase two, first of all, takes 2 years to complete. You got to go through two wet seasons because we have streams right here." And I said, "You know, soil samples." I said, "You're not talking about, you know, a 2,500 square foot lot." You know, this portion of the Johnson Ranch alone is, you know, 90 acres. And so you're talking about a whole lot of holes, and each hole is going to cost about $2,500, including the lab fee. So I said, we're talking, you know, $500,000, 2 years. I said, it's not going to happen. And sure enough, it never happened. And by the end of 2013, the court was really putting pressure on, you know, you're going to settle this one way or the other. So the settlement agreement is written by the Braun's attorneys and Capital One's attorneys. So they draft it. The court doesn't draft it for them. And so this is what the settlement came down to. That the Braun's, in consideration for this settlement, would vacate the property, vacate the ranch, on April 1st, 2014. And Capital One, in consideration, would shall assume all the risks and liabilities of the property and shall do all the remediation, written remediation, which means all the statutes pertaining at that time. And they would, lastly, they would indemnify, the Braun's for, you know, from any liabilities or anything. Otherwise, they're buying it as is. They know what it is. It's the decision to purchase or to foreclose on that property is, you know, they've had informed consent. So we sign off on it. We vacate the property. Just to show you how thorough the court is, the court mandated that Capital One would hire what is known as asset managers to come in, videotape the entire property, the hacienda, and see that all the livestock is gone and the condition and this and that and the other, and the place got to be broom clean, what have you. And when the court gets that, then the court requires that Capital One and the Braun's sign under oath that, you know, we've complied and we agree to this. So all that's done, but there's a little thing that happens to me that really set up a flag in which I explained to my attorneys, and that was...
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. Capitalism has reared its reared its head again.
You got to get out there and get the money.
Exactly. Got to thank those advertisers, because you know what? If you don't thank people, it's just like you just don't care.
Absolutely.
You're listening to We the People. We'll be right back. Share the land, or we could just steal it. What the heck? It's all the same, right? Because what's yours is ours, and what's ours is ours, and it's usually the way the government sees it. All right, back to you, Oscar. Uh-oh. Oscar's in the cone of silence. Oscar?
Oscar?
Hello? Something bad has happened.
Uh-oh, I see the problem. All right, try it now.
Oh, there he is.
There he is, Oscar.
I'm back. I'm here.
he's out there. If Oscar cries in the wilderness and he's alone, can we hear him? No.
No, not if you have the mic
turned
off.
Hello, hello. All right. Well, with that smooth transition, go right ahead. We are such...
Well, let's finish up this saga. So on April 1st, 2014... the party sign and the court dismisses, the case with prejudice, which means it can't be adjudicated again. And the best part for me and my wife, discharge our debt of $13.5 million.
Wow.
So we move on, and, we don't leave the coast. We lived in El Granada, which is very close by, and then on to, Hawaii last year. So what has this all got to do with the EnviroBank? Well, We had been working on a project for the last 3 years about infrastructure development, specifically about water, in something that is known as the North American Water and Power Act, which is a wonderful plan, and we were planning, as we were leading up to the election, this past election, to present this to the next president, whoever that was. And we didn't know who it was, right up to the last moment, of course. So, but the whole thing was going to be about water infrastructure and then how to finance it. And the way to finance it was going to be through the EnviroBank. And the EnviroBank is based upon monetary policy that was the same policy created by Abraham Lincoln to fund the Civil War. When the Civil War, when Lincoln was inaugurated, by the time he was inaugurated, sworn into office, the South had already, pulled out. And it definitely was going to be war. And so Lincoln turned to the banks and said, what can you do for me? And they said, we'll provide you with all the money you need. And the interest rate was going to be between 24% and 36%. So, impossible. Can't do it. So one of his advisors, suggested to him that they frankly just adopt the same system that, the colonists did before becoming, organized and everything. They created a script. And that was the currency. That was the money. And it wasn't backed by gold or anything. It was backed by the full faith and credit of the people that settled, this nation. So that's what Lincoln did. And that's how he funded the Civil War. And it was money that was created by our treasury, U.S. Treasury, with no interest. And it was no debt. So, of course, Lincoln was assassinated. And shortly after he was assassinated, within just a matter of a few months, the money masters, the banks, the central banks, the Bank of England primarily, convinced our politicians that, we don't need to renew that funding, that creation of currency. So there was no central bank in the United States after Civil War. There were private banks, different states, and they created their own currencies, what have you, but there was no currency of the United States created by the Treasury. So we get to 1913, and from the end of the Civil War to 1913 is literally one of the most prosperous, if not the most prosperous, period for the economy in the United States. Inflation was non-existent, and full employment, what have you. And there are business cycle problems, but nothing that were catastrophic. And then in 1913, with the election of Woodrow Wilson, two things came to pass. And that was, first, during the summer months, the income tax was finally created. And then on the eve of Christmas, on the 23rd of December of 1913, the Federal Reserve Bank was created. And what the Federal Reserve Bank, it's not a government entity, it's not a government agency, it's an independent banking. And all the traditional bankers from around the globe run the Federal Reserve. Anyway, they took over and they create the currency. And as we speak today, 97% of all the U.S. currency is created by banks as debt. The mint, the U.S. Treasury, only creates coinage. All the other funds are borrowed in the form of bonds from the Federal Reserve Bank creates a bond, our Treasury buys them, our Treasury pays interest on them, and then our Treasury gets the money from whom? From us, the taxpayers. So, as we all know, we have a national debt of approximately almost $20 million straight up, and it's projected to go forward by the next 2 or 3 years to be to $24 trillion. There is no way under this system that my children and my grandchildren and future generations will ever be able to get out from the financial slavery in which this system has contrived. JFK, John F. Kennedy, in his presidency, utilized the greenbacks currency, and to the tune of about $4.5 billion, which, by the way, is the amount of money created during the Civil War by President Lincoln. Of course, $4.5 billion went a lot further then than it does certainly today. So, what this whole petition drive to establish the U.S. EnviroBank is to ask President Trump to instruct the U.S. Treasury Secretary, Steve Mnuchin, to start issuing digital greenbacks currency to pay off all the federal debts and to pay off student loans and to reduce, if not eliminate, our income taxes, and to fund infrastructure such as the North American Water and Power Alliance. Now, that might seem like, God, you know, that's pretty damn extreme. Well, I'm going to share with you something, your listeners, that probably one in a million know, that I discovered in 2012. And that was that in 2011, the first Federal Reserve audit was conducted. And in fact, it was a partial audit. And it was proposed by Ron Paul. And I believe actually Bernie Sanders also requested it. Well, the document was released, the survey was released in 2000 and quietly published. The media, all the media, didn't really want to talk about it, didn't really publicize it. But what it revealed, and it's there for anybody to see themselves, is that $16.1 trillion was released by the Federal Reserve to all their bankers, both nationally and throughout the world. $16.1 trillion. Now, the only portion that we ever heard of was the $700 billion that was requested and approved by the Congress in 2008. So from the time from 2008 until mid-2011, unbeknownst to the public, no communication supposedly between the Congress, the Senate, and the Federal Reserve about what they're doing. We don't know. And, you know, I don't ask anybody that is either listening to this show or has the benefit of reading the petition. I say to you what my mother used to say to me, look it up. So look up, go to Google, look up First Federal Audit 2011. And while you're at it, do something that I've done for the last couple of years. Look up Senate Blocks Audits 2015 and 2016. And in this case, Rand Paul, both those years, in January 2015 and 2016, put up a bill where there would be annual audits of the Treasury, of the Federal Reserve, so the people of the United States, the taxpayers, the ones that are having to pay for all this debt that we get from the Federal Reserve is paid for. Well, that's literally financial slavery. And you know, there are a huge portion of our nation, possibly half, possibly more than half, that are the never Trumpers.
Right.
Well, I can say one thing for sure. President Trump did not create this monetary system. That is all on the Democrats and the progressive Woodrow Wilson. And at the very least, an honest citizen will ask themselves, why hasn't the Democratic Party, that supposedly is for the working class, for the middle class, why haven't they ever done anything to relieve the burden on our people? And I think we, the people, have the right to know. So the petition, again, strictly asks, in fact, there's two petitions, one shorter than the other, just in case those who don't want to get deep into the reading and the history behind it. But the law is such, we're not, the president does not need the approval of the Congress in order to do this. This is something that's in the Constitution. It is something that has been done before, and it is strictly the president's skill to say, okay, we're going to have digital green vaccines, just like President Kennedy did, just like Lincoln did. Lincoln didn't, obviously didn't have digital. But the new technology that we have to disperse digital currencies is called blockchain. And on the petition itself, there's a little link there that that you'll discover in the first paragraph that explains to you what this Greenback Digital is all about and how it works. And many of the listeners might have heard of Bitcoin. Well, that's just one of, at this point, hundreds of digital encrypted currencies that are being used worldwide. And you know who one of the biggest users are, or who is the biggest user? And the answer is China. And China, which has 1.3 billion people, have been funding their own infrastructure, the largest in the world, projects unbelievable over the last decade. Trillions of dollars, trillions and trillions of dollars, or the equivalent of dollars, whatever their currency is called, that is created by the Chinese bank for internal use. And so, you know, they're not in a position, literally, to start putting tax burdens on one and a third trillion people, because they'll kill them. There'll be a revolution. And their chief challenge is to keep the economy going so they can employ these people, so they can feed these people, what have you. And if they did it with private sector banks that were paying interest, what have you. Now,
hold that thought. I was trying to find a good spot, but there is no good spot. Sorry.
you got to do what you do.
Just have to launch in like the cake knife. I'm just going to wreck the frosting. All right, we'll be right back.
I'll take a breath and you go to the
You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
And that's what I call work. And this black on my blue collar is against pay dirt. They work me hard from dawn till dusk. I'm doing double time, putting out sweat for a few people. FICA and the state, well, they make my paycheck look like a big mistake. The tax man takes hands before I see a cent. And what they don't get, I'm on BD's feet. I'm addicted to a dollar, and that ain't.
the president.
Oh, yeah.
So I can show you how your money's spent.
Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends?
Bob's nodding at me. He's like, start talking. And I'm just like, but I like the song. It was fun. all right. So Oscar, what is the, we were talking on the, during the break here. What's the downside of doing this? What do you think the opposition will be?
Well, the opposition will be, oh my gosh, it's just not true. They'll certainly attack the people that have contributed, that are contributors to the petition. I put the petition based together on all the knowledge that I've accumulated here over the last 3 years. But who the contributors are is there. But the petition itself has the whole plan laid out, and it's less than a page and a half in which to read on the U.S. EnviroBank Monetary Reform Act. And you click on that link, and it takes you to the two-step plan to national economy, economic reform, and recovery. And it's clear, it's concise, and they literally even provide the Monetary Reform Act in printable version. And it shows what few words that are highlighted in blue that need to be changed in the statute to go to a digital currency. And so it's again, this is nothing new. The only thing that's new here is a public awareness that even exists. And the media does a great job in constant deflection. Let's concentrate on how we're going to handle the bathroom crisis, whether we're male or female, or we're in transition someplace. That's the rule of the game. So, but that aside, what are the calls for action that I'm requesting? And the first is to get engaged. And you can do that by going to usenvirobank.com. That'll bring us to our website. And literally as you arrive at the website, the opening video, which is taking control of our money, automatically goes on. And that was produced by the Public Banking Institute in 2011. And it's excellent and it's easy to understand. I think it's, comprehension could be held by a fifth grader here. And it's all true and common sense. And it just happens to be, in current time, you'll recognize the players in this video. And they're pointed and to the point. But the system that the U.S. EnviroBank is going to be modeled after, I'm talking about contemporary, is the Bank of North Dakota. And the Bank of North Dakota is a state bank funded by the state. And it came into creation about 15 or 16. And it's very well alive and profitable. And the big crash in 2008 didn't have any impact of the citizens of North Dakota. Financial impact, I'm talking about the banking system collapsing, what have you. So we have the Chinese model on the newsletter, which is right below the petitions themselves.
I put that whole newsletter right on the page there. So,
right on the page, and on the newsletter, the top thing is the petition itself, and a link to get to the petition, and then following that is the Value of Water campaign, what the funding's for the EnviroBank, U.S. EnviroBank, or the EnviroBank of California, and that's the Value of Water Alliance, which has been in existence for the last 3 years. All leading up to last year and the election of the new president, begging him to put up at least $1 trillion in infrastructure funding. But what none of those the Alliance never offered or anybody ever offered. So how are we going to fund it? And, of course, that's the dialogue that's going on right now as we speak in Washington. Oh, we're going to have to raise the cap. And, you know, we're going to borrow some more money, you know, and who's going to pay for this? You know, well, that the who is always the same. It's we the people that pay for this. So at the bottom of the petitions, we say share it with your family and your friends and your community. It's something that they can look at. And read the letter to the president that comes with the petition. These petitions go to the president, and it goes to the president with a letter. And, you know, see if the letter rings true to you. And, you know, this is a solution to save our economy, which is in desperate need, and especially when you think about what we're just living through right now with the with a hurricane going through Texas and Florida, those types of things are taking take years and hundreds of billions of dollars to get back to where they were. And our state's on fire.
Yeah.
And we literally have been spending for many years. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it literally is on fire.
Yeah. And our federal government and our state governments are spending all their money on suppression rather than on trying to stewardships or the vegetative manage. All our lands throughout the nation have over 100 years of growth. And all the fires we have are catastrophic fires. The largest forest fire in California history was the Rim Fire in the fall of 2013, followed the following season by the adjoining fire, I believe Sequoia, where over 1 million acres were burned. And surrounding the Hetch Hetchy Valley and reservoirs, which impacts the entire Bay Area. Our waters are polluted statewide when we have these type of fires.
Well, they're freaking out about the, you know, any kind of emissions while we're putting all this gigantic particulate into the air. I mean, I did hear a stat at one point. I should have looked it up for today. But, you know, the amount of pollution from vehicles, I don't know, it would take, you know, a million years or something to equal, you know, one of these forest fires. It was just something crazy like
well,
that.
Well, I'm gonna give you a truism that is never talked about. And it just goes to what you were saying, okay? Man caused climate change. Okay, does man pollute, mankind pollute? Absolutely. But you know what? Who the biggest polluter is? Mother Nature.
You know? Darn, I was going to pick environmentalists.
And Mother Nature also cleanses itself. It reuses itself. Here's the fact that very few people actually really know, and that is the amount of water planet Earth has today is the exact same amount as it did several million years ago. Okay. So, death, pollution, recycling, all those things happen. Forests are not meant to stay, you know, never to burn. And, you know, beyond the belief of spotted owls can only live in ancient forests, you know.
Which is a lie.
The case. Yeah, which is, of course, a lie. They can live in a Kmart sign up in Oregon. That was proven.
Well, they little small note. They were living in the clear cuts over on the coast when I lived over there. They were living in the clear cuts, but that was totally blowing the paradigm. So they caught people, we won't say what agency, with bags of cat food.
Oh, you mean a government agency?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Bags of cat food on the back of ATVs. So they'd slice the bag of cat food, drive through the old growth, and put all this cat food on the forest floor so the rodents would come in so the owls could be photographed in the old growth.
Yeah.
So they could make their case. It's like the bags of cat food. That was legendary. We better take our last quick break here, and we're going to be back with Oscar Braun till the top of the hour. So you'll have probably 9 hot minutes to wrap her up for us.
I'll do my best.
Thanks. We'll be right back here listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
My life was all so so simple, and the ways of the great world seem strange and funny. Then when I was a young man, I learned of that machine. It turns out all those bales of precious money.
We just found the theme song.
You sure did.
Classic. He invented a money machine.
And we gave Oscar some James Taylor going into the break there.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't even notice. Gosh,
James
Bob.
Taylor's a money machine.
Glad one of us pays attention. Nice job, Bob. All right, Oscar, where do you want to wrap this up for folks?
Well, I tell you, I want to wrap it up with an invitation.
All righty.
And that is... I'm asking all that that hears this, or all that hears of this petition, which was written, by the way, the California Watershed Posse, yours truly, to get engaged, to at least look at it. And I'll remind you that, you know, this is a super great opportunity for us to provide our children. And I'm talking about those under 18, as well as those above 18.
So not like the dreamer children that are 40 years old?
That
I'm sorry.
Considering
the minor considerably older than that, I'll have to say, yeah. Oh, I love them over 40 years old, of course. They're my favorite. But anybody can sign a petition. That's our First Amendment right. And these days getting harder and harder to hold on to any of our rights. It's almost the First Amendment seems to be the one that's greatest under threat right now. But have them, you know, they're the ones that have to take the burden going forward. Ask them what their preference would be. Do they want Honest Abe Lincoln's approach? Would they like to be able to be on the same footing, so to speak, as Chinese? In you know, providing their citizens, their people, with the services that government should be providing, and also providing the currency debt-free so that for the consumers. So, you know, engage, when I say your entire family, I mean your entire family. And if they don't, if they're young enough, they don't have an email, well, you know what? You can use mom or dad's emails or a friend's email.
Actually, it's more likely the kids would have the email, and the parents will have to use theirs.
Oh, yeah. You know, exactly. I tell you, when I need to have anything, I turn to my grandsons if they're available, or I have a nephew that has been taking care of me ever since he's 8 years old, and he's going to be 16 actually here very quickly. So, but go to the kids. They'll understand. they've got a real sense, you know, if you think back in the during the election, whether it be Ron Paul or Rand, they got a lot of the millennials supporting them. And these are things that Rand Paul and Ron talked about. And again, it's beyond dispute what the reality is and what the history is. And the nation literally cannot exist under this Federal Reserve system. And countries throughout the world, I mentioned China, but there's the countries throughout the world are, you're talking about at least over 120 of them, have already started to transition into these digital blockchain currencies because they cannot pay the interest, you know, and the world cannot go into global depression. We don't need that. We got enough problems. And so this is something that is within the power of our president, within the power of the Congress to support them. And, you know, and will there be a tax on it? I'm sure there is. But I'm suggesting that, you know, a great call to action is talk to your local congressman. Chances are that wherever you are, you like your guy or you like your woman. And you know, ask them to support this petition, to support the president, to support the people in being provided debt-free, interest-free credit. And again, there's nothing new to this. The applications can be used for infrastructure, but it also can be used for healthcare. I am literally working on a petition that is going to be regarding healthcare, and I'm calling it, you know, healthy self credit. But if you break out healthy self, it's heal thyself credit, and it's funding that can be provided interest free to the populace, and to take care of their health from beginning to end. And there's things the government can do if it has the power to do, and it's that any healthcare services that are paid with a federal Heal Thyself credit will indemnify the provider. What does that mean? Well, that means that the provider doesn't have to charge you excessive charges because of malpractice insurance and all these regulations and this and that and the other. So we most likely would be able to cut the cost in half. The same difference between buying a bond in order to finance from the Federal Reserve to finance a bridge, a dam, a school, whatever the case might be. The average, nationwide average, the interest is 10.8%. So, you know, a $100,000 project usually ends up costing $220,000 to $240,000 over a 30-year term. That's a bad deal. Or to quote the president, it's rigged. So I think that, I know that our nation and our Declaration of Independence, it is the consent of the governed. And I think it's time that we the people consent to the type of monetary system we have. We never were sought out by the Wilson administration or the Democrats.
No,
and they've kept it to themselves.
Well, there's a lot of information, and we've put the links on there. But people, once they get reading, you can read and read and read. The site is very, very deep. Thanks a lot, Oscar, for joining us. Hope you have a
well. Thank you for having me.
Lovely
you
day.
Guys are terrific.
And enjoy Honolulu. You can live you can live on vacation for us.
There you go.
I'll do my best.
Much appreciated. Well, I guess we'll sign Oscar nose off and Bill's nose off and take it over and find out what's wrong with it. We have an exciting day planned. Thanks for joining us. You've been listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
And you're listening on KCNR Shasta Redding.